what are first principles and why are they important? So what are first principles? First principles are the sort of founding assumptions on which a theory is based. And there are many ways this is really important. One of them is that I've mentioned often in my books that unquestioned assumptions are the real authorities of any culture. Another way to put all this is that if you can slide your premises by people, you've got them. And I've said for years that, for example, you hear some talking head on the TV say, how can we make the U.S. economy grow? Well, there are some assumptions there. One of them is that we want the U.S. economy to grow. The second is we want the U.S. economy to exist. And the third is, who the hell's we? So it was said of Hitler, this is really important because it was said of Hitler that from insane premise to monstrous conclusion, Hitler was coldly, icily logical. So once he slid the idea that there is, it's like, how can we solve the Jewish problem? Well, that's a good question, Adolf. How can we solve it? But what he's done is he's slipped past you the idea that there is a Jewish problem that has to be solved, which of course is just the insane premise that leads to the monstrous conclusion. And so it can be really important to try to unpack what are the first principles of any discussion, because you'll find often that if you're getting gaslighted, or if you're just getting confused, it can be very helpful to return to first principles. I want to sort of step back from this for a second and talk about really my earlier experiences with first principles. I first became very, very familiar with them when I was in college. And part of the reason was that I have always had one of my intellectual strengths is not rote memory. I've always had not the best rote memory. I have a pretty good associative memory where if I can find associations between things, I can remember this thing, which moves me to this thing, which moves me to this thing. But if I don't understand the relationships between them, I have a very, very bad rote memory, which is why I barely got C's in organic chemistry, geology, mineralogy, why I would have done just as bad in anatomy, why I would have done just as bad in zoology, botany. I just can't, like mineralogy, I couldn't remember, like, what is the difference between these two minerals. I can't, if I understood the relation between them, then I could get it. But without it, I can't. And so this happened in physics and other places too, where I would, what I found quite often is if I had formula to memorize for various tests I had to take in college, sure, I would try to memorize the formula. But what I found when I got to the test is that I would have forgotten it. And so what I always ended up doing is returning to first principles and re-deriving the formula. So I could go back to the beginnings of our understanding of it, and then I could move forward to get to this formula. It was much more effective for me than simply memorizing them. And I know people are the opposite, that they can memorize formula like that, and that's great for them. But my point is that, so one of the things I really learned in college is a rigor I had to learn because I was not very good at the straight memory thing, that I learned sort of a rigor on going back to first principles and then building up again from there. And that training has stood me well since, in terms of, I mean, this is really important in all of my work, that if we talk, I mean, here's another direction to go, is that my friend John Osborne has always said that a lot of environmentalists begin by wanting to protect a specific piece of ground and end up questioning the foundations of Western civilization. How does that happen? Because they ask the question, so why is this land being destroyed? Why are we having to defend this land from being destroyed? And the answer is because it makes money to destroy this land. And then they ask the question, so why is land being destroyed everywhere? And the answer is because it makes money, usually. And then they ask, so has every economic system destroyed the land? Like, no. And then the question comes, why would you develop an economic system that destroys the land? And then you ask the question, when did this develop? And that takes you back to the roots of Western civilization. So my point is, we can try starting at first principles, and we can also start at the present and make our way back to first principles. And so this happens. A lot of women do this too. that they will say, so why do men beat up on women? Or why do men rape women? Or no, it might start with, why did I get beaten? Why did my boyfriend who said he loved me beat me up? Why did my boyfriend who said he loved me rape me? And then they can start asking, well, so does this happen to other women? And then they can start asking, what are the implications of men beating on women? And they can start asking, has every culture had men beaten on women? And then they can move it back through time. They can say, what are the roots of this? Where did this come from? And they can get to the first principles of sort of patriarchy's violation imperative, the belief that what men think is more important than what physical reality is. They can get back to those principles. And for me, at least, it's really, really important to try to get back to first principles as often as possible. And a great example of this is sort of bright green environmentalism, where they're asking, so how do we keep this party going a little bit longer using solar power and wind power? I've said so many times that one of the problems with so much climate activism is that so many of the mainstream solutions to global warming they take industrial capitalism as a given, and the natural world is having to conform to industrial capitalism, as opposed to taking the natural world as a given and making it so the culture has to conform to the natural world. What they're doing is they're not going to first principles, because this is just another way to say they're asking the wrong question. They're asking how can we keep this party going longer? They're not asking, do we want this party to go on longer? They're not asking, what are the effects on the world of this party going on longer? They're not getting back to first principles. And I know that it helps me a lot. You know, in many ways, the way I've talked about the way my book Culture of Make-Believe developed was that I was asked to do a 5-page introduction to an encyclopedia of hate groups. I was like, okay, great, I can do that. And then my first question was, what's a hate group? And you see how that's going to first principles, because instead of just going, okay, well, let's talk about why the KKK is bad, it's like, well, if I'm going to write what is a hate group, I need to ask, if I'm going to write about hate groups, I need to ask, what is a hate group? I need to go to that first principle. And so I went to a KKK website, and the KKK on their website was saying, we're not a hate group, we're a love group because we love whites. Well, so that leads me to I have a choice. Either A, the KKK is not, in fact, a hate group, or B, we can't trust rhetoric. If you can't trust rhetoric, what can you trust? And this is yet another way of getting at that same question of trying to get to first principles, that rhetoric is not the first principle ever. There's always something beneath that rhetoric. And I know we've been hammering this issue a lot lately, but it's just come up again that there was a midwives association that is arguing that women don't get pregnant, that people get pregnant. And they were at one point, I commented on their page that there has never been a single male human being who has given birth. And I was told to remove that comment because the comment was transphobic. And then the comment was deleted and I was banned. And when we talk about trans issues is a great example. And it doesn't matter what we're talking about, that a male who I try to be precise when I talk about things as much as possible, and try to be as clear as possible and try to use the accurate words, that a male who identifies as transgender is not actually a woman. A male who identifies as transgender is a male who identifies as transgender. And if that male has surgery, that male does not have a vagina. If the male has what they call bottom surgery, the male has had his penis removed and had his scrotum removed, and a simulation of a vagina has been created. And the simulation of a thing is not a thing. And this is not, in this moment, I'm not being pejorative, I'm not being judgmental, I'm simply stating that in order to move to rhetoric, we first have to understand what the facts are. And that's first principles. And it's the same no matter what issue we're talking about. If we're talking about are solar panels good for the planet, then we have to ask, okay, what is a solar panel? What materials are it made of? Where did those materials come from? What were the environmental costs associated with the extraction of those materials, the fabrication of the solar panel, and the use of the solar panel, and the transportation and then use of the solar panel? We need to get the first principles on all that. And we need to ask, are we asking, is a solar panel better for the world than no solar panel? Is a solar panel better for the world than burning oil? Those are completely different questions, and those can have completely different answers. And so when I talk about moving the first principles, one of the things I'm talking about is attempting to be really clear. Here's another example that one of the premises of Endgame, and one of the things I'm known for talking about, is how there are no rich people in the world. There are no poor people. There are people who have lots of pieces of paper that we all presume have value, or lots of little ones and zeros on hard drives at banks that presume they have money, but they don't actually have money. Yes, this money manifests as social power, but what we don't have rich people and poor people. We have people and we have people, and we have a social agreement that these people have more power than these people because these people have money. And I'm not saying that, oh, there actually is no difference between the poor and the rich in that sense. There is a very real difference made of this, but we have to recognize that this difference is a social. I was like, okay, so I got a friend, and he's a really good guy. I like him a lot. And he loves talking about the gold standard. And I keep asking him, why is gold more valuable? He says that gold has inherent value. He and I agree that cash, currency, has no inherent value. You and I agree that a $20 bill is worth whatever you can buy for a $20 bill, but it has no essential inherent value. He and I agree on that. But then he argues that gold has inherent value. And I keep arguing, no, gold has no inherent value. Beans have inherent value. Because I can eat a bean. But gold, the only value is that you and I agree that it's worth, you know, 1,200 of those dollars or whatever it is that it's worth. And so what I'm getting at is it is really easy for us to get confused as to what is real. And this culture continually attempts to confuse us to what is real. And you know, there are those who argue that all language is inherently misleading and alienating because the words are not the things themselves. And I think that they have taken an idea and gotten confused about it. Because yes, saying the word sex is not like having sex. And fortunately, saying the word shot is not like getting shot. And the words are not the things themselves. And I've said this before, and I've written this before, but that's because we forget the purpose of words, that I understood the purpose of words one day in my 20s when I was driving down the interstate. I pulled onto an off-ramp, and at the end of the off-ramp was a stop sign. And I suddenly understand the purpose of words, because the purpose of words is not to be the thing itself. The stop sign doesn't stop the car. The stop sign tells me to stop the car. And the purpose of words are to help us remember experience and to help lead us toward experience. But the problem is that words can be used to confuse us and can be used to take us away from experience too. And this is why getting back to first principles is so important, that in order to unravel, okay, R.D. Lang talked about the three roles of a dysfunctional family. Rule A is don't. Rule A1 is rule A does not exist, and rule A2 is never discuss the existence or non-existence of rules A1 or A2. So what this means within the context of an abusive family is you can talk about anything you want except for the violence you have to pretend isn't happening. And now first principles, getting to first principles would say, let's not talk about why father beat daughter. Let's not talk about the things that led up to it. What is really important, let's just talk about what actually happened, that father struck daughter. And let's build up from there. You know, I've had this happen in relationships too, where either I or the other person has done something that has hurt. Let's say I do something that hurts you. Then you can say, gosh, that really hurt. And I can say, well, I did that because of this and this and this and because of what you did. And then you did this. So then I did that. And that's all fine. But in the context of a personal relationship too, I found even there, it really helps to go to first principles and say, okay, nothing else matters. What matters is that I did this and that is what hurt you. And that's where we have to start. We can have that discussion. And then after we understand first principles, then we can move to second principles. Here's why I did what I did. I was snappy because I'm in a lot of pain from Crohn's disease today. But that's not a first principle. That's a second principle. And the reason I'm jumping all over with this is because I think it's an incredibly important thing to do on every level, from the interpersonal to the most global and ecological, that it's much harder to gaslight someone or to mind fuck them when they are, it's much harder to get gaslighted when you are able to consistently move back to first principles. And perhaps if appropriate, we can do another video another time about what are some first principles in some various discussions. I mean, here's another great example, is that Weyerhaeuser calls itself the tree growing company. It's like, great, is Weyerhaeuser the tree growing company? But what are the first principles? The first principles are they cut down trees and sell them. And then they put new trees in their place, but they've cut down mature forests and put in little baby trees, which may or may not reforest, etc. So my point with all this is, you know, I'm thinking also about how so many Indigenous people have said to me that the first and most important thing that we have to do is to decolonize our hearts and minds. And part of that, they've said to me, is remembering your loyalty, changing your loyalty away from the culture and back to your community, back to the real world. And for me, the way I put it in myself too, is it's an attempt to move past all of the training and again, get back to first principles. And, you know, another way that I talk about this is that in the 1980s was the first time really that the corporate press called human beings consumers more often than it called them citizens. And that's a dramatic transformation, because if they can convince you, or if you can convince, if they can get you to convince yourself that you're a consumer, not a citizen, your options for resistance are removed down to consuming and not consuming, as opposed to if you're a citizen, you consume, not consume, boycott, organize, leaflet, pamphlet, and revolt. But there's another transformation too that took place several thousand years ago, where we were converted into citizens from being human animals who need habitat and who have teeth and claws. And if they can convince you that you are a citizen of a state where the state's supposed to take care of you, then once again, your means of resistance have diminished. And there's one more direction I want to go with this, which is, I've talked about this before too. And one of the reasons this is so important is because this culture has been overrun by postmodernism, which is just a pox on critical thinking and a pox on everything it touches. And my introduction to postmodernism, I've said this before, was a friend back in the late 80s who was dating a postmodern philosopher. And she and I had a conversation where I said something about rape being bad. And she said, well, no, we can say that rape is bad, but whether something is bad or not is based upon the stories that you tell each other. And I didn't have an answer for that at the moment. It just sounds really crazy. And I didn't know anything about postmodernism. And so I learned more about it. And then I was talking to Charlene Spretnak, who wrote the wonderful book States of Grace, about postmodernism. And she said, we can cut through postmodernism with this. And she held up a glass of water. And she said, we can tell ourselves whatever stories we want, but the truth is, without drinkable quantities of clean water, you die. And so we can understand that drinkable quantities of clean water are a good thing, no matter the stories told. And her point is, we are animals who need clean water, clean air, who need habitat. And those are first principles. And you can build up, you can build your entire philosophy and understanding of the world from those first principles. And you will have an entirely different philosophy and worldview than if the first principles upon which your philosophy is built are that every story is just as equally valid as every other story. That's a completely different set that you're going to have. So again, the reason this is important is because we are told so many lies. And as I wrote at the beginning of A Language Older Than Words, in order to maintain our way of living, we must tell lies to each other, and especially to ourselves, that in order to break away from those lies, it is absolutely crucial that we become very disciplined and we practice very hard and we work very hard to learn how to find and understand, return to, and build up from first principles.